Dead On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. About the delay, but the wind is blowing. No, really, the wind is blowing. And when the wind blows, so does the internet connection. That's why the delay. That's why no third switch, because the wind is blowing. Frontier Communications, bringing you internet that works when the wind isn't blowing. It's a beautiful thing. Hi, this is The Horn. It is the 6th day of April, 2017. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And I'm waiting to see who all's going to greet us in the chat room as soon as the aging, tired, cranky old production computer decides to, there we go. Well, yes, headonradionetwork.com is where we live, and if you should happen to go there and click on chat room and pick yourself out a screen name and a password, well, you will be immediately greeted by Anatole and Hoghead and Laborman and Richard and Steve from Georgistan and Stockton Larry and VT Blom, all part of the madcap, merry, multimedia, zany, wacky, real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room during the 3 hours each evening that this program is live from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and all points in between and everywhere else on the planet. Hello, Bermuda. Hello, India. Of course, this is the last night of truncated programming. I'll only be going through 8 p.m., not 9 p.m., because it takes about an hour to get all the uploading done and everything and turn stuff around so that come 9 p.m., I can put the spark to the Malloy campfire and we can do that for a couple of hours. I've had a lot of fun this week. And I hope other folks have as well. But as it stands, we've got this Thorn in the Side Thursday, 2 hours to enjoy cussing and discussing and carrying on and whatnot. This is a listener-supported broadcast operation, and thanks to our subscribers, we have no hole to fill in this evening. Thank you very kindly, one and all. That means that we have just our plain old boring garden variety $200 to raise this evening. One at 200, two at 100, four at 50, eight at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 1/4, or 64 at $3.13. And let's see, this time through, we'll take that half penny roundup from 12.5 cents to 13, and we will dedicate it to, we will dedicate it to the Kincaid Mansion staff. We'll have cupcakes or something. Okay. So under whatever, just go over to headonradionetwork.com and click on contribute, and there's a PayPal interface there. If you'd like to become a subscriber, you're welcome to become a subscriber. We cherish our subscribers. One of these days, we're going to get to 100 subscribers, and then onward to 400. Someday, someday, someday. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, you can do that as well. The mailing address being The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. And it was no small irony that news broke today that America's original insult comedian, Don Rickles, was cut down in his prime at the age of 90 years. He was a thorn in many sides, and hilariously so. One of the few people who could really, really insult Frank Sinatra and not wake up with a horse's head in his bed. So, and insulted everybody. No one was safe. So, I can't wait. I can't wait. You know, it's one of those moments where you really wish there were pearly gates, so that you know, maybe he could Rickles could get up there and, you know, call St. Peter a hockey puck. Come on, admit it. You'd love to see that, wouldn't you? Sure. Or maybe Dean Martin's at the pearly gates now. Who knows? But anyway. Gone but not forgotten. So, where do we go with this Thorn in the Side Thursday? There's an abundance of opportunities here. Gosh, we can talk about Neil Gorsuch. We can talk about the fact that the Senate Republicans did what the Senate Republicans were always going to do, whether it was Gorsuch or some right-wing Heritage Foundation clown with big floppy shoes and a big red red bulbous nose and a fright wig. And no, not Slappy Thomas. He's already there. But the they were going to get rid of the filibuster, so it's gone. And I had an email last night. I forget. Please forgive me. I'm trying to remember who sent it. I'm thumbing through now. Come on. Oh, it was James. It was James. Who said, I know you have your misgivings, and they're going, and the Republicans are going to do what they want to anyway. But the bright side is this. We will then get true democracy in the Senate. This dependent only on who we can manage to elect. The biggest complaint I hear from the low info crowd is that nothing ever changes. Well, things would start to change in the Senate, thus giving some hope, meaning those who want it the most. The filibuster still exists for legislation, unless they got around to knocking that out today too, but I don't think so. They were in a hurry to get away on their Easter break. So now, I guess Mitch McConnell just thinks there's never ever going to be a Democratic president again, or a vacancy on the Supreme Court when a Democrat is president. Because now, hey, look, now you can nominate a brand new, green as grass, fresh out of law school, wild-eyed, bomb-throwing, Trotskyite, liberal, lefty, what have you, and they can be on the court for 70 years. And there's not a goddamn thing the minority in the Senate can do about it. Of course, the same applies in the other direction. The next Supreme Court nominee is going to make Neil Gorsuch look like John freaking Marshall. No kidding. So, as the saying goes, hunker down. Since we do talk about thorns in the side here on this particular day of the week, a little note coming in from Mike in Cascadia. The Bureau of Land Management website and flyer photo, Mike informs me, has been changed. He says, Bob, this isn't a joke. The photo used to be of an adult and a child, both with backpacks, looking what I presume to be westward toward the setting sun, over some green and grassy, hilly geography, with some maybe forest land in the distance and the golden rays of the sun sinking into the west. That's what the Bureau of Land Management used to be. Now, ha! No kidding. When you visit the Bureau, the Department of Interior Bureau of Land Management, you are greeted not by a father and son with backpacks on staring into a golden sunset, but instead you're greeted by a photograph of a seam of coal. Just a big old seam. Because out in Wyoming, and like in the Powder River Basin, they got 100-foot seams of coal. And this appears to be one of those. Yeah. Really. And Mike in Cascadia points out, despite the coal seam photo, BLM still advertises that BLM has more recreational land than any entity in the U.S. domain. Come on, son. Let's go down and hack away at some coal. Just to get that good outdoor experience. Breathe deep, son. That's called black lung. That's what helps make America great again. I wish I was kidding, but I'm not. Speaking of which, way back in 1977, when President Jimmy Carter reluctantly signed into law the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act, and I do mean, reluctantly. He said it was going to be a disaster. People had warned the Sierra Club and other entities that it would be a disaster. And guess what? Ha! It was a disaster. Still is. SMACRA, Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act, is what opened the door for what my hero, Judy Bonds, used to refer to as strip mining on steroids, namely mountaintop removal coal extraction. Well, down inside SMACRA, there was a provision for something called the Abandoned Mine Lands Fund. Think of it as a fund for carboniferous Superfund sites, because abandoned mines are so toxic that they really are kind of Superfundy. Because the way mining has long worked in Merca,
the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever in the universe, amen, under God.
The way that mining works is that your mining company comes in and gouges and blasts and digs and tortures the land, and they get all of whatever it is that they're after that they can get, and then under optimum capitalist circumstances, they simply walk away and leave their mess for the people who have to live near it to deal with. I mean, because capitalism. So, SMACRA set up the Abandoned Mine Lands Fund. And it did so in the hopes that we could at least take care of the messes after the coal companies left them. Well, they made a mistake in the drafting. Or maybe it wasn't a mistake. Maybe it was just a little Easter egg. Because what they did is they left a little clause that said, you don't necessarily have to use the abandoned mine lands money to clean up abandoned mine lands, but we really would prefer it if you made coal mine reclamation projects a priority, okay? And then the Office of Surface Mining Reclamation and Enforcement, OSMRE, which operates under the aegis of the Department of the Interior. Well, they were charged with making sure that nothing hinky went on. Naturally, hinky things went on. The Office of the Inspector General of the Department of Interior has released a new report, and in it, they point out that states that get abandoned mine lands funds quite often don't use it for abandoned mine lands. Among other things, the Department of the Interior has dropped the ball and hasn't even bothered to make sure that it was used for abandoned mine lands in the least. In other words, putting communities that have to deal with these toxic shitscapes back where they started, you know, with pure, unmitigated capitalism. Because that abandoned mine lands money, well, that's socialism. It's all generated by a tax on the sale of coal on a per ton basis. There's $2 billion just sort of sitting there in the Abandoned Mine Lands Fund. And in this report, which came out last week, the Inspector General of the Department of the Interior says that Wyoming, Montana, and Texas have a nasty habit of using abandoned mine lands money on reclamation projects that have absolutely nothing to do with coal, and then just ignoring coal reclamation projects. In Wyoming, between 2013 and 2016, there was $166 million for coal reclamation projects and $214 million for non-coal reclamation projects. Texas spent $16.1 million on non-coal projects since 2008. They only spent $1 million on coal projects, coal reclamation projects. Out in Wyoming, out in Wyoming, for instance, they like to use their abandoned mine lands money for highway maintenance or building additions onto hospitals or for, and this sounds sweet, doesn't it, wildlife trusts. At one point in time, the legislature of the state of Wyoming even took under consideration the idea of taking $10 million in abandoned mine land money and renovating the athletic facilities of the University of Wyoming Cowboys. Mercifully, that did not happen. There are four places in Mississippi badly in need of reclamation. Mississippi has some carboniferous mud, and of course they make a mess with that too. So, of those four programs that badly need reclamation, none are getting any. Nonetheless, Mississippi has spent $336,000 since 2008, but didn't spend any of it on reclamation. Instead, for instance, in 2015, all the money went for administrative costs, which means that the governor's nephew or the local county political boss's ne'er-do-well middle son got himself a nice job to do nothing with. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, this is, of course, par for the course. It is to be expected. It is exactly the way the Republican Party likes for money to work. The federal government generates the money and just gives it to a Republican governor and legislature and says, hey, do with it whatever you want to. I mean, if you want to leave some toxic shitscapes and spend it... Instead spend the money on Bubba Joe Bob's administrative salary. That's fine by us. Because that's, you know, if you ask a Republican, they'll tell you time after time after time, you know, your state and your local governments are the ones that best know what they need. In fact, when EPA Administrator, Scott Pruitt, went on Fox News Sunday recently, he said, I will tell you this, Chris Wallace. This attitude in Washington, D.C., that people in Texas and Oklahoma and Kansas and Colorado and the rest of the country don't care about the water they drink or the air they breathe and are not going to take care of the air and the water locally, I just don't believe that. And, of course, there he goes. And he can say that with a straight face because it's a matter of believing when the knowing part of it all points to the fact that, well, you know, maybe ordinary folks care about their water and their air, but goddamn Republicans who have power in government sure as hell don't. Because, that's what those Republicans were after, I'm sure. Cleaning the water and the air of Wyoming by renovating the basketball arena. Beautiful, ain't it? No, it's not. Randy in PA says, I just tuned in. Am I the only one who's freaking out about the Rapig Lickens usage of the so-called nuclear option in the Senate? I know people are upset about it. I guess I'm upset about it. But it's kind of like... It's kind of like being upset about Don Rickles dying at the age of 90. You kind of knew it was going to happen, didn't you? Sooner or later. Because the Senate created this situation. The Republicans in the Senate created this situation. And bear in mind, even though we can look and say, hey, you know, this would have all been different had Hillary Clinton been elected president, had the popular will as opposed to the old slave owner mechanism known as the Electoral College determined the presidency. The fact of the matter is, Mitch McConnell said, and others of the Republican caucus said with him, we're not going to let Hillary Clinton appoint any Supreme Court judges either. They were just going to have to come up with a different lie besides the one.
Tony Scalia was cut down in his prime there down in Texas when he went down to kill some bird in a cage. But it's too close to the election. The American people need to settle this at the ballot box. Which, of course, was the bullshit fig leaf that they used.
to get around Merrick Garland, who was eminently qualified to sit on the court. Now, for me, I looked at his record, and I found him to be a little bit rightward for my taste. But still, he was as or more qualified than Ann Gorsuch's boy. And he is. Forever he will be Ann Gorsuch's boy. The apple falling not far from the tree. Right? You know, she who did some of the most early, some of the earliest and worst damage to the EPA to try to keep it from functioning. Again, devolving power down to the states so that wealthy Republicans could then decide that, well, they like clean water, but screw those poor people. They don't need any of that. So yeah, I'm disgusted. But what's to freak out about? I mean, I'm not barking at you, Randy. But it kind of serves no purpose. In a way, this dovetails into a note that I just got from Matt in San Francisco. Subject line: Chinless Challenge, $200. Bob, I have a $200 challenge on the table. I am so pissed off about this McChinless's actions and the Dems just being as ineffective as the day is long. The lost opportunity that Obama passed on regarding the recess appointment of Merrick Garland, that at least would have been an FU as he walked out the door, but we have to play nice. I'm tired of it, and I'm tired of my fellow citizens who seem incapable of getting off the couch and doing something. Anything to stop this madness. So, for lack of any better ideas, let's throw some money on the table and at least make sure the horn campfire keeps burning. So there's $200 on the table that if it is matched by another $200, will take care of fundraising for tonight and tomorrow night, too, for that matter, which would be a tremendous boost going forward. Thank you, Matt. Thank you very kindly. You know, there's an open question as to whether a recess appointment would have worked, but he didn't. But he didn't even try. There's that really novel theory that Mitch McConnell, by not holding a hearing, you know, you don't want the guy. You hold the hearing, you reject him, and you send him, and you give him an apple and a roadmap, and send him packing. But they weren't even willing to do that. Not even so much as a cold cup of coffee with a single member of the Republican caucus. The Republican majority in the Senate, an unheard of degree of, among other things, outright legislative rudeness bordering on barbarity. The American legislative equivalent of who was it? Marcus Bibulus, who shared a consulship with Julius Caesar. And was so opposed to everything that Caesar wanted to do to, you know, passing laws to make sure that poor people got to eat food and things like that, that he literally went home and watched for the omens. So, and every time Caesar wanted to do something, Bibulus piped up and said, "Oh, I saw a left-winged crow flying backwards, upside down, toward the Capitoline Hill, and everybody knows that's a bad sign." And all the members of the Roman Senate, or half of them at least, harumph, and nothing got done. It was like that. I forgot that part. Thank you, Arnold. Arnold pointing out you have to be a neoliberal if you've offered someone a cold cup of coffee. Neoliberals! And more specifically, that's anyone who offers Glenn Greenwald a cup of coffee is a neoliberal. But yes. Thank you for the challenge, Matt. Thank you very kindly. It has been responded to already.
There's only $160 left in the challenge. Thank you, Matt, very, very much. And it does help us keep the home fries burning. Or fires, home fires. Nobody likes burnt home fries. More questions. Randy in PA wants to know, does this mean the total elimination of the filibuster in the Senate? No, it does not. That will only happen when, say, the House passes the Great Big Tax Relief Act of 2017 that declares that no one named Donald Trump ever has to pay taxes again, and that the corporate tax rate will be -500%, and every corporation will get a rebate every year, blah, 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 blah. Then the Democrats, the bill won't, there'll be a cloture vote. Cloture will not be achieved. And then Mitch McConnell will blow that up. And you will effectively, at that point in time, have two identical bodies, legislative bodies in Washington, D.C., operating on identical terms. The Senate was originally, there's this apocryphal story about somebody asking about how the bicameral legislature would work, and George Washington takes his cup of tea and says, here in this boiling hot cup of tea are the heated passions of the House of Representatives. And then he pours some into his saucer and he says, and the saucer is the Senate, where those passions will be cooled in the light of deliberative of deliberative reason, or you know, some such hokum as that. Okay. Well, that's over. The Senate will be a house of wild-eyed maniacs, just like the House of Representatives is a house of wild-eyed maniacs. But let's remember something, please, in the name of maintaining something approaching perspective. The filibuster is not in the Constitution anywhere. Okay? It is a creature of agreement. In point of fact, it's barely 100 years old. Oh, this being the 6th day of April, I should point out, happy Democracy Safety Day. This is the day, 100 years ago precisely, when, in the name of making the world safe for democracy, the United States threw in with a pair of colonial empires, Britain and France, to oppose the German Empire, such as it was. And coming out of that, a whole host of disasters. Not the least of which is the little bit of map drawing that took place that created a country called Syria. And another country called Iraq. And another country called Lebanon. And just as it turns out, well, and you know, I may get some pushback on this, because we're supposed to get all damp and dewy at the mere mention of the word democracy. But one wonders if we made the world safe for democracy, or if the world it's or if democracy in fact made the world a little less safe. Because seems to me, for instance, the filibuster. I mean, we all loves us some democracy, right? Majority rule, all that stuff. Which is another way of saying mob rule. Democracy is not what we've got. Look, what's the breakout? What is it? Something like 270,000 people for every member of the House of Representatives? Right? One person speaking for 270,000 people, not all of whom agree with what the one person says. How does that qualify as democracy? I would submit to you, not well at all. And then there's the Senate, where one person can represent more cattle than human beings, as is the case if you're a senator from, say, Montana. Or one senator can represent tens of millions of human beings if you're, say, Kamala Harris or Dianne Feinstein, California. And the filibuster itself is about as undemocratic as you can get, whereby a minority may control what the majority does. It's a check on democracy to make sure that the mob rule doesn't get completely out of hand, just mostly out of hand. Randy says, you know, I've been scanning the news channels all afternoon, and before now, I couldn't get those two questions answered. And that includes the internet, including the Randy Rhodes Show, my broadcast TV, including RT, barely covered it. But the thing is, there's not a lot of TV programs where you can just write in and say, hey, you know, do you know the answer? And if the person on the other end of the program, the person hosting the program, doesn't know the answer, like me, they'll say, I don't know the answer. Let's see if somebody else does. Or if I know the answer or have a best guess on it, I'll tell you. And that's a little bit of, and you know, it kind of goes back to what Matt in San Francisco did with his challenge just now. There's a reason. There's a reason for keeping the lights on here at the Horn. Oh, well, see, and this is how it works. John just wrote in to let me know that I was way off on the average number of people represented by a member of the House. One member of the House of Representatives represents about 735,000 people. How in the name of God, knowing something like that, can anybody let those two words, our democracy, escape from their lips without bursting into paroxysms of sarcastic laughter? Beats me. Question coming from Steve from Georgistan. Since Gorsuch is not officially confirmed until tomorrow, what if the Dems refuse to show up tomorrow for confirmation? Would Chinless Mitch call the Sergeant of Arms and have them arrested for dereliction of duty? At least it would be a final stand. Well, at that point in time, you're talking about the rules of quorum in the Senate. And those things, they play pretty fast and loose with those. For instance, I saw somebody speaking a couple of days ago, and as soon as she got done, she said, I would suggest to the president that there is not a quorum. And so you had a quorum call. And a quorum call is, in most rules of order schemes, deemed to be germane at any point in time that it is raised because it challenges the ability of the body to do its business according to its own rules. So the question you're really asking, Steve, if I'm interpreting correctly, is what constitutes a quorum in the United States Senate? If every Republican shows up, do they have a quorum? If they do, they vote and screw the Democrats, sore losers. I don't... I know where you're going. You know, at least it would be a final stand. Make it a real pain in the ass for Chinless Mitch. And, you know, basically it would boil down to trying to work on the stroke that Chinless Mitch so richly deserves. But I don't know what the quorum rules are, and as such, I don't know if that would do any real good. But anyway, as far just historically speaking, like I said, this being Happy Safe Democracy Day, the cloture rule is only only about 100 years old, because before then a filibuster really was a filibuster. If a senator could take the floor and start talking and reading and doing whatever he had to do to hold the floor, he could hold the floor as long as he had breath in him. The cloture rule was brought about as a result of the actions relating to the First World War of a senator by the name of Robert, and I always screw this up. I got a 50-50 chance, and I'm going to screw it up. It's either Robert La Follette or Robert La Follette of Wisconsin, a Republican, who was so hotly opposed to the idea of getting into the First World War that he came damn close to making everything grind to a halt. And after that, the cloture rule was put in place, which allowed the Senate to call for a vote on whether to invoke cloture and therefore end a filibuster. I hope that's helpful. Okay, thank you, Cheryl. 51 senators for a quorum. Guess what? If all the Republicans show up and the Democrats don't, they just vote on Garland and he wins 51-0. So I think that addresses the question. Let's see. Steve in New York. Subject line, the prosecution rests. Need any more proof that we are seeing the final nails in the coffin of the Republic? Oh, I don't. I think the final nails were driven in a long time ago, Steve. I think this is more a matter of peeing on the grave. But that's me, and I'm cranky. Further, okay, Steve says $330 million per 435. John says $735,000 per 435. Did I say Garland? I don't know. Gorsuch. Yeah, well, okay, so Gorsuch sails in. I think we all knew, but I regret the error. Thank you, Sandra, for jumping in next to Asa. We now have only $110 to go in Matt's Pissed Off in San Francisco Chinless Mitch Challenge. Thank you, Sandra. Thank you very much. Under the subject line, roll the dice. Steve, another member of the fraternity of Steve, this one in China. I'm sorry. China! Jesus. Says, roll the dice. Here's an idea for research. How much of this federal reclamation money of the abandoned mine lands goes into creating and subsidizing the gaming culture that has replaced the productive work that is all but gone? turning the entire country into Las Vegas is something roughly coincident with the deterioration of so much else. Bread and circus? I don't know, but who knows? Might be in there. Hey, look, if you put a casino on top of an abandoned mine land, win-win, baby. Yeah. And thank you to Larry. Let's see, so that's 105 to go. Thank you, Larry. Thank you very much indeed. So we've got all of that. Let's see. I mentioned last night some cause for celebration in the state of Maryland. No fracking there. As far as nails in coffins, Larry points out, we fucked up big time in 1980 when electing Reagan. That was, in my opinion, the nail in the proverbial coffin. Maybe it's because of my age, but I find it very easy to point to the election of Ronald Reagan and the rise of what is called movement conservatism. And by movement, we're referring to something that should be promptly flushed. But that's the moment when everything goes sideways. Remember, Neil Gorsuch's mama, Ann Gorsuch, becomes administrator of the EPA and promptly goes about the business of wrecking the joint. Or then there was, what's his name? Watts. Remember that? Remember that jackass at, what, Interior? Who did something similar? Ed Meese at Justice, who was all worked up about the porn and not so worked up about, you know, dirty dealings with Iranian mullahs and corrupt Coca-Cola bottlers in Nicaragua and Ali North and Manuchehr Gorbanifar and you remember Iran-Contra. Larry continues and said, you know, you got to give it up to those greedy white landed slave owners and founders of this country. They sure put in place the perfect fucked up control system that's almost impossible to change through our Congress and Senate. Pure evil. But they didn't mean it that way, Larry. Let's not be quite so cynical. They were trying to put together something that wasn't a goddamn monarchy and wasn't a theocracy, where neither monarch nor church would be able to rule the political roost. There is an argument to be said that since everybody was pretty much rich who was setting up the government, that they did take extra special care to make sure that the money was protected. But if you can find a governmental system that has not done that, whether it be money or wealth or cacao beans or puka shells or gold or what have you, protecting, you know, the great storehouses of fucking barley, if you can find one of those in a sedentary culture where that has not been the central goal, let me know. And, you know, let the Nobel Committee know, because they'll probably give you one of their little awards. It's baked into sedentary human culture. Hell, I guess you could say that even hunter-gatherer societies, to the extent that they could, they stockpiled dry meat. You know, maybe they carried around bags of desiccated warthog assholes and measured wealth that way. You know, this is the kind of stuff that occupied the minds of Hegel and Engels and Marx and Adam Smith and Milton Friedman. And it's it's a bugaboo of the human condition. No, Randy, you're not hogging the airwaves. Randy has questions. How come the Senate can enact these rules now instead of only at the beginning of the two-year session? Because they want to. Because any rule can be broken. Because they can say, hey, we had a rule that you can only change the rules at the beginning of the sessions. All in favor of getting rid of that rule, say aye. Aye. Ayes have it. Okay, so now we can break any rule we want to anytime we want to. All in favor of getting rid of the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees. All in favor, aye. Ayes have it. Done. And it'll pretty much work that way when they get around to the legislative version as well. And who knows? I mean, if you take in the for-profit media, which can be a somewhat nauseating affair, you know that all the prognosticators and the government and the Republicans are going, you know, what we need to do is quit talking about this healthcare bullshit and move on to tax reform. And I saw a Bloomberg report today saying that, yeah, Wall Street's getting mighty nervous out there. They're afraid corporate taxes might not be cut, and we desperately need tax reform. From what? Most corporations in the United States pay an effective tax rate of fucking zero to begin with. They really do want us to pay them for the privilege of having them do business with us. Even more than we already do. Wall Street's getting kind of nervous. So, but again, and those of us who remember this moment. Remember, for it is the doom of men that they forget. Those of us who remember this moment will take great glee in it someday when the Republicans are in the minority and there's a Democrat in the... and a wild-eyed liberal is appointed to the Supreme Court and the Republicans cry stiff alligator tears. Bitter tears, salty tears. And with any luck at all, Chinless Mitch will still be alive. And they can say, hey, go ask Mitch when he's just small. Right? Yeah. Larry says, we're supposed to be the beacon of all that's right and just and do that, but then we turn around and do this. We're the epitome of a walking contradiction as a society. Like Alice Cooper once said, we still got a long way to go. Meanwhile, coming from the halls of the history department, Asa says, speaking of filibuster, Bob, can we take a moment to acknowledge that the pride of South Carolina, Strom Thurmond, rapist of the upstairs help, held the floor down for 24-plus hours to filibuster the 1957 Civil Fucking Rights Act. That's 208 hours in 2017 hours, if you consider the inflation rate. By my ciphering, Senator Merkley would have had another 193 hours to go to begin to offset any of the hate and bigotry perpetrated by that right-wing filth. Yep. So, looky, where'd the time go? Yeah, Randy, that was kind of my point, I think. Not only do corporations pay fucking zero, they actually get money back. Mm-hmm. Because, well, they write the rules. I mean, what do you... Right, yeah. Somehow I'm not even a little bit surprised. So herein lieth the end of the filibuster for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. If you've got something that's burning you up or you somehow need you need to reach the program and just chat a little bit, you're welcome to. We always welcome new callers. If you've never done that before, you'll find calling this program to be quite easy and, dare I say, even painless. And how do you go about doing that? Well, 304-663-4676 or 304-574-8178. Either one of those gets you in. The first one, 304-663-4676, is, of course, the stress line. Works for some, not for others. And then Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet is Bob Kincaid Horn. It is just that easy. Email comes in, bobkincaid@gmail.com, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Twitter is easy too, @BobKincaid. So let's see what's on your mind, or in the next hour or so, on my mind. I had a note coming in from Ron in the, I guess, refrozen north. Honest to God, we're expecting a bunch of inches of snow here tomorrow. I kid you. Ron, good evening, sir. By way of an hour-ending bumper, long-distance dedication going out to, from all of us here at the Horn.
Thursday, April 6, 2017.
2016 saw all the major news networks reduce coverage of this vital issue.
Corporate media failed to inform the public on climate change right when we needed it most.
Don't you think the fact that we have these coal power plants belching carbon emissions into the air, do you don't think that plays a role?
Even Fox News pushing back on Trump administration's climate denial. EPA sued for refusing to ban toxic pesticide, plus...
Dr. Mann, are you affiliated or associated with an organization called the Union of Concerned Scientists?
Scientific integrity on trial and under attack in the House of Representatives.
Oh, man. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and... snarky comment.
So today he kept an important campaign promise, one that he said many times. Today he repealed the environment.
Well, I'm glad we're just getting it over with quick. Rip off the Band-Aid. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, that clip in the teaser there at the top, are you now or have you ever been a climate scientist? Could have been straight out of the McCarthy hearings, but it wasn't. It was in the Science Committee over the past week.
That's exactly right. Republicans in the House of Representatives are accelerating their attacks on the scientific community. At that House Science Committee hearing, which was loopy, by the way, eminent climate scientist Dr. Michael Mann was the only scientist brought in from mainstream science. He sparred with committee chair and climate science denier, Representative Lamar Smith of Texas, who also attacked one of the world's most respected scientific journals. Here's Dr. Mann.
The scientific method. We've heard this term quite a bit. The chairman keeps using this term. I do not think it means what he thinks it means. According to an article that came out a few days ago in the journal Science,
That is not known as an objective writer or magazine.
Well, it's Science Magazine. Yeah, that's
my man, Science Magazine is not an objective magazine?
Not to the House Science Committee.
Unbelievable.
House Republicans have launched another attack on science this week, passing two bills that, if they become law, would restrict what kinds of scientific data the Environmental Protection Agency can legally use for developing regulations. Scientists warn that both bills will handcuff the EPA's scientists. The Congressional Budget Office says both bills will increase the EPA's cost by $250 million a year, and that's in the face of deep budget cuts.
And just because I need to ask, you don't mean literally handcuff the EPA scientists, right?
No.
Not yet, anyway. All right.
A coalition of environmental law groups have sued the EPA this week, asking a federal court to force a ban on all uses of the common pesticide chlorpyrifos. Last week, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt ignored the EPA's own science and the EPA's own scientists and refused to ban the pesticide, despite strong scientific evidence linking the pesticide to fetal abnormalities and neurotoxic poisoning in farm workers and their children.
Well, in Pruitt's defense, those scientists were handcuffed at the time.
Well, this is despite the fact that the EPA has already banned the use of that pesticide for residential use. Meanwhile, a new report from Media Matters finds that the corporate mainstream media failed the American public right when they needed it most last year by covering climate change 66% less than they did in 2015. The corporate media spent only 50 minutes combined on climate change, the lowest level since 2010. Worse, during the presidential campaign, TV networks spent 0 minutes reporting on the differences in climate policies between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
How many minutes did they spend during the presidential campaign?
Zero.
Zero. Fantastic. Way to go, media.
Now that Donald Trump is president, Media Matters now says the media is finally reporting on Trump's climate policies. Even Fox News Sunday host Chris Wallace challenged EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt on the administration's climate science denial.
You said there, I would not agree that carbon CO2 is a primary contributor to global warming. And the question I have is, what if you're wrong?
Let me say to you, CO2 contributes to greenhouse gas. It has a greenhouse gas effect. The issue is how much we contribute to it from a human activity perspective, and then what can be done about it from a process perspective, Chris.
Where the hell were these people years ago?
Finally, some good news. Despite Trump's attempts to roll back climate regulations that would cut emissions from power plants, Reuters reports electric utility companies aren't listening. Most of the 32 utilities in 26 states that Reuters surveyed said they have no plans to go back to using coal and will continue their multi-billion dollar long-term plans to shift to cleaner, cheaper sources of energy.
So sad. How are we ever going to bring those coal jobs back?
Gonna have clean coal, really clean coal.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us and share us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
For more than 8 years running, this has been your Green News Report.
Kind of wish they'd have just played the whole song there. I could chair dance for a little bit. 11 minutes past the hour. Thorn in the Side Thursday on the horn. We've got $105 to go to match Matt in San Francisco's challenge, his Chinless Mitch challenge. Thank you, Matt, for making it, and hopefully we'll make it in the next 48 minutes or so. But for now, let's run over and talk to Larry out in Oregon. Wrong button. Hey, Larry.
Okay.
I hear you fine.
Okay, greetings from the Oregon coast. I'd just like to start off by saying it's a pleasure to be with you, Bob, of course, in this kind of safe zone, and of course the rest of the Horn family. But, you know, I messaged you. I kind of wanted to run something by you, and maybe I'm just going crazy, but it seems like with this, I don't know, with this unstable military agenda that Trump's got cooked up, I'm afraid that, you know, I mean, he could be getting us into a third world war practically. And then here on the home front, you've got this alt-right fake news media that seems to be trying to almost gin up a civil war. I mean, you almost
But Larry, they had to slow down a little bit. I don't expect that you follow things like that website that rhymes with light and fart. They've called a quick timeout on World War III and the Cold Civil War. Instead, they've now started going after Jared Kushner. That's not a joke.
Good. I know, and I hope that keeps them occupied for a while. That'd be a good thing. I mean, if they, you know, they can knock each other out. As far as I'm concerned,
I mean, they've done everything but publish his own personal copy of the learned protocols of the learned elders of Zion. I mean, the alt white Nazis are out in force.
Oh yeah, definitely for sure. And I'm just hoping that the public this time around is smart enough to. I noticed that, you know, 50% of they had a poll today, and 50% of the public was against military intervention in Syria. And I know with Trump's low poll numbers that, you know, of course he's always going to entertain the idea of getting us into a conflict. And usually when that happens, the American people bite hook, line, and sinker, a good percentage of them, and, you know, approval ratings will go up, I hope. And I feel like a lot more people are taking a stand now because of shows like yours and others and just getting the word out there. And I feel like more people, you know, are finally starting to wake up, and maybe we won't just, you know, go, oh God, we got to get behind, rally around the president.
But we've got a habit of doing that. Let's remember, I mentioned it's Happy Safe Democracy Day.
Mm-hmm.
Only months before we wound up getting into the First World War, Woodrow Wilson had, in fact, been elected on a platform of, at least he kept us out of war. And no sooner was he reelected than the brass bands were marching down the streets, and we were sending the doughboys off to La Belle France, singing Mademoiselle of Armentières and all of that crap, and
we went from not wanting into the war to not have it, to not being able to get enough war to satisfy us.
You know, you bring up a good point, Bob, there about, you know, about our short-term memories, and it can flip the other way. You remember the start of the first Gulf War, or at the end of it, George Bush, you know, shrugged senior's approval ratings were through the roof, but it wasn't but a year later, and due to a couple other things too, but a year later that, you know, everybody, it had completely flipped back the other way and people were against him. So you're right, it's scary that people have such short-term memories, and yeah, I just, you know, all we can do is kind of hope and, you know, stick together.
And if you want an idea of how squirrely this potential Syria misadventure is, there was, you know, there was a lot of talk when we went in and slaughtered the innocent people of Iraq about and the white wingers and the Repiglicans and what all. I had a hissy every time somebody said, well, what's the exit strategy? Ah, fuck a bunch of exit strategy. We're just going to kick ass and get rid of Saddam. That's what we're going to do. That's our exit strategy. We're going to make Saddam exit this life. That's what it is, you sissy liberal. And lo and behold, it turned out we didn't have an exit strategy. It turned into a quagmire. We weren't greeted as liberators. There weren't people putting daisies in rifle barrels. And it was, well, we've got even less coherence with regard to Syria.
Well, we've never had an exit strategy. Vietnam, we won't in Syria, but then it becomes a political talking point just as soon as it's over. Oh, we didn't have an exit strategy. And we need to have an exit strategy next time. And we never even get a fucking exit strategy. We didn't have one in Vietnam or, you know, any of these other little chicken shit conflicts that Reagan got us into.
Right. And I'm sure if somebody asks Trump about his exit we're going to have an exit strategy. It's going to be a big, beautiful exit strategy. It's going to be the best exit strategy. It's my secret exit strategy, and I'm not going to tell anybody till we start.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, as sure as you're in West Virginia, he will, and he won't. That'll be what he says to a T, and he won't have one afterwards, and it'll just be a bunch of mumbling reasons as to why he didn't, and, you know, it's just become more of a quagmire and a clusterfuck, and they can't even talk a good game anymore, you know?
Yeah, it's really kind of pathetic, sort of pitiful, and you wonder, but what does it mean to be anti-war? I saw one story today where cranky old Uncle Ron Paul, you remember cranky old Uncle Ron Paul?
I can't stand that. Him and his creepy son get under my skin almost as much as the Trumps.
Well, the Ron Paul Liberty Report is out now.
Oh, good God.
You have to remember this is the same Ron Paul Liberty Report that a few decades back was publishing articles about how black people were animals. Well, the Ron Paul Liberty and his...
Hey, this Syria thing, this chemical gas attack thing is clearly, obviously, a false flag to get us into war in Syria. That's what it is, says cranky old Uncle Ron Paul.
Ron Paul's never had ability with me. Like, you know, seeing he'd pop up on InfoWars every now and then like he used to. But, yeah, it's just, I don't know, you know, I'm hoping that... I'm hoping that people will see through this and, you know, we're able to get through it. I'm just so nervous right now. I got all, you know, there's so much shit going through my head with all this, and it's hard to even formulate a sentence, you know.
Yeah, but I try not to be, Larry.
Okay.
Because we've got to, I don't know, maybe you need to run off and read Rudyard Kipling's If, you know, the line about if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs. I'm joking.
I know.
but it's kind of like Randy earlier saying, am I the only one who's freaking out about the loss of the filibuster in the Senate? If that's how you get through it, you know, groovy, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just such a stinking realist, I guess, and I've been. You know, I've been made by one. You know, scratch a pessimist and find a brokenhearted romantic, mm-hmm. or a brokenhearted optimist.
I'm wily as far as what you, wherever it goes down. It's like I kind of passed any kind of drawing my mind for that about a mile back down the road. I mean, it's just anticlimactic, really, at this point. You know, what's going to happen with it? I mean, I feel jaded and basically, I can't articulate it as well as you do, of course, but I mean, I feel the same goddamn way you do about this. And, you know, and it sucks because this is really the most important. I mean, that Supreme Court is more important than any of this other shit we're talking about in the long term.
Well, particularly the long term, because the Supreme Court is the only element of government, of federal government, that is given the opportunity to fuck America for two or three generations at a time.
Oh, yeah, and with expanded life expectancies, I mean, it's just, you know, it's scary. And we really need to get out there and vote in 2008 because we get too many more of these fuckers in there, and they could get enough people in Congress to change the Constitution.
It's kind of like what James said in his email that I referenced. So now, you know, if people get pissed off enough and they get to participating, well, we can really change shit. And we can do some real damn democracy in the Senate. And I applaud James's attitude on that. But we're about to put a guy on the Supreme Court who is going to do everything in his power to, I mean, a $10 million dark money campaign supported him. And he looked around, I don't know nothing about no dark money. And so what do we expect? There's no way that he is not gonna uphold things like and expand things like Citizens United. You know, the whole idea that one of these days, I mean, remember the heady days of the presidential campaign, Larry, when we said things like, well, you know, once Hillary's president, she can appoint Supreme Court justices, and during the primary, Bernie said the same thing. I'll only appoint Supreme Court justices who are willing to overturn Citizens United. Yeah, right.
Yeah, no way. You know, even before the election results were in, I was thinking about that too, and it's like the fight to, you know, when Ted Cruz came out and said, you know, we can survive with eight or seven justices or less. I mean, they would have dug in. You want to talk about digging in? The Republicans really would have dug in on any nomination, period, and tried to wait it out. You know, and what worries me too about Gorsuch getting on there is that Bob? I mean, if
he's on there for 38 years, maybe 43.
I know, and check it out. If Trump does make it to run for re-election, let's just say, God forbid he does, I feel that they're really going to try to pull out all kinds of weird shit and stops and come up with this and that. And I mean, I'm just, you know, it's you never know. From day to day, it's always something new and a whole bunch of it. And yeah, it's just really good therapy to be able to, you know, call and talk with you, of course, and be able to listen to your show. And I'm so glad I found it. But, you know, I know you got other.
Well, tell the friends and neighbors, Larry. Tell the friends and neighbors. All we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it. And the more people there are, the more therapy we can have.
Absolutely. Hey, love you, brother. I know you got other people that want to call in, so I'm going to listen and go make some dinner. And I really appreciate you taking my call, Bob.
Bon appetit, Larry, and I'll try not to ruin dinner, okay?
All right. Thank you, sir. It'll be vegetarian in honor of you.
All right. Later. Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Larry in Oregon. Let's run over to the Skype line and say, hey, what's happening?
Hello, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Hey, Mr. Kincaid, I've been listening to you for a while now, and
okay, well, let's get one thing out of the way. First, one, could I have a first name just so we can be friendly like that? And two, it ain't Mr. Kincaid, it's Bob.
Okay, Bob. I'm Robert.
Hey, Robert.
I'm kind of new at this, but say, listen, I'm a hardcore progressive, and what I've learned over the years is that we are a bunch of damn cowards, and no matter what we do up there in Washington, I sit back and I listen, I drive trucks, I sit back and I listen to these people out here and listen what's going on up there in Washington, and it upsets me how short the Republicans' memories are, you know? And it's like, they believe in God Almighty, well, I guess God Almighty, Ronald Reagan, who was one of the biggest hypocrite morons that I've actually met him before. And it's, to me, I don't know what to expect. Now we got this jerk that's going to be up there in the Supreme Court. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a little horrified, because what I'm doing now is you know, I'm doing more research. I'm doing more research, and that's all I guess. I sound a little nervous, but
take a deep breath. You got all the time you need, and we have not had a caller. We've not lost a caller yet that I didn't push the wrong button and accidentally hang up on. So you're cool, man.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I love listening to you and Angry. I'm a big fan of you guys, but like I was saying, I don't know what can we do. We have, like I said, our Democrats up there, a majority of them, well, especially those three, I don't understand. I guess, well, they're only Democrat in name, because every time you turn around, you know, this is supposed to be the resistance, and every time you turn around, those three idiots are always going against, you know, what would actually make it better for progressives and America. You know, and I get so frustrated. And,
well, it is frustrating, because if you're a progressive who's committed to progressive ideals, Robert, then you know you've got a pretty good idea of things that would that have in the past made this country better, and would in the future, and maybe even in the present, make this country better. Universal single payer access to health care, for one. There's no way that doesn't wind up being a net positive for this entire country. And you look at the Congress and you realize the degree to which money from big pharma and big medicine and the big whatever have kept, you know, and that's the only reason it doesn't happen. It doesn't not happen because it's a bad idea. It doesn't not happen because it's bad for capitalism. And that just makes you want to eat dirt and run rabbits.
But you know, it's really disappointing. Like the other day, when they had that little bullshit committee on there, you know, it was Trump fans. What you call them, Trump pansies? How are you gonna give this damn guy an A? To me, can't read. You know, he was given his wealth, but it's like those idiots on the right really don't give a damn as long as it's more profitable for them. They got who they wanted up there in the office because I look at it like this. As long as he can sign his damn name and you got those idiots over there whispering in his ear, we're fucked big time. Excuse my French, but
let's try to I want to make sure that we keep some stuff in perspective, Robert. There is okay. because we are smack dab in the middle of the hoopla, we tend to look up at everything that Trump does and we go, "Whoo, Jesus." And but going back to something that was said earlier, this bullshit with the filibuster. You know, Trump didn't do that. Mitch McConnell did that,
true.
And they've been threatening to do that for a generation.
But as far as those idiots, as far as on our end of the, I guess, spectrum, the progress, the Democrats up there, well, maybe if I, you know, they know McConnell, even if he hadn't have done this, you know, those who call themselves, you know, more or less, well, if I vote with him, then I can, you know, maybe vote against him on something bigger. That's bullshit, because he was going to do this regardless.
Yeah, this was if they had quietly said, "Well, okay, we'll gin up 60 votes for Ann's boy Neil," and then, you know, when you send a real monster up here, we're going to filibuster that some bitch, okay? And Chinless Mitch would go, "Well, okay, sounds good to me," and then he would have blown up the filibuster on that one because he's a lying sack of shit.
But those idiots, it's, you know what, I'm going to be honest, to me it's like this. It's like, if, that's like Obama. Now, I love the man. I mean, as far as, today I just turned 51. And as far as my lifetime, he is one of the better presidents that we've had, you know. And but I don't understand this here. Now, like I told this one guy, well, I hate Obama this, Obama that. The only thing that pisses me off about Obama was that he wasn't the angry black man. Damn it, if you believe in something, it, to me, it's like he was trying to reach too far to the, he was trying to reach to the right. They're steady slapping him upside the damn head. Damn, man. How many times you just slapped up the head?
Well, he had to know what we know. He had to know about that meeting with Jim DeMint and all those other right-wing Republican POSs who said, we don't care what he wants, we're going to stop him. He knew about that. Now, the question was, did he want to go to war with him? And,
but you know what? He didn't. Bob is like this. To me, as a black man in America, to me, it's like, okay, like I tell my son, you know, it's not, you're not being a coward, you know, if you stand up for what you believe in, but you know, you still want, to me, he was trying to, Obama was trying to please everybody, knowing damn well you can't please everybody, and these people already came in mind because this black guy is in the White House, and then he's trying to, you know, as a person of color, you really have to. There's a, you might not think about it, but you do. You're constantly watching because everything he does, everything a person of color does, he has to work twice as hard to get just as far.
Well, twice as hard to get half as much.
Exactly. Exactly. But you know what, though? The reality of it is, and this might sound like being an ass, but blacks been cleaning up behind white people's trash for you know, they've been housekeepers for a long time. They go in, clean up, and then when the big man comes back home and tears it right back up, and that's the way I look at it now. You know, now they would have loved Obamacare, which is a Republican idea. If he hadn't have pushed it the way he did, and there was no way he was going to get that single payer health care, that single payer plan up in there for the simple fact. Now, this man, with what he had to work with, to me, it's you know, he did the best he could. He didn't have no help.
But no, then, and,
all of a sudden,
and
you guys want to slap him down. And
I mean, look, it was
put all this crap in there to raise up everything else, and then blame it on him. They never stood. Even the Democratic Party never stood up for this man. They never did. And he, I mean, you know, he should have explained it a lot better. A lot of things he should have explained a lot better, you know. But I mean, damn, man. It's
well,
like
look at, I mean, you talk about the Affordable Care Act.
Yes,
right after it went up on appeal and it was allowed to stand by the Roberts Court, with the exception that they gutted the mandatory expansion of Medicaid. You know, I said right then and there that John Roberts was the most brilliant Republican in the country, because he did something by striking down the mandatory Medicaid expansion and making it, optional to whatever states that cared enough about their citizens to implement it, to make sure that if that had gone through, Robert, and understand, you know, all I can do is stand on the outside looking in when you talk about, you know, when anybody talks about the black experience or the African American experience. You know, I've got some experience of growing up in the South, but I will tell you from where I stand, if the Medicaid expansion had been left mandatory, if the Medicaid expansion had gone through in Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia and South Carolina and other states like that, you would have seen a sea change in the subsequent political life of those states. Because those states exist in a constant, perpetual state of oppression. The entire name of the game in any southern state is making sure that black folks don't vote in numbers sufficient to change the status quo.
And if they had been able to stand up and say, Barack Obama brought us the health care that our mamas didn't have, our daddies didn't have, our grandparents, great grandparents, Barack Obama has just done the most significant thing for the black population of the South since the Civil Rights Act. It would have been an entire, for all I know, state legislatures would start falling. I mean, I think it's that significant.
You know, to me, it's like my son's 26 years old, and it's kind of scary, you know, with all the crap that's going on in the country today. You know, my stepson, he kind of asked me one day. He's like, Pops, I don't see the black. The cops on black crime, you know, it's cops against black. I said, well, think about it. I try to explain to him, you know, this crap has actually been going on for years. It's just that everybody got a damn, as you call it, a computer in their pocket, and they're taking pictures. You know, I mean, for instance, me and my wife, we're in Texas. Well, we live in Texas, and me and my wife left Dallas, gets pulled over. And have you ever heard of a meet and greet? This is what the sheriff actually pulled us over and said he did. I asked him, I knew I wasn't speeding.
What in the actual hell is that?
A meet and greet. All he seen was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed white woman with a black guy, and that was the problem. He had to make sure I wasn't doing anything I had no business doing.
Well, howdy there, ma'am. This fella ain't kidnapping you, is he now?
Exactly. You know, and he actually went and asked her the same damn questions he asked me. You know, where are you coming from, this and that. You know, he had me out in the back of the car, you know, and I'm like, really? But this is the kind of, you know, the kind of shit we go through, you know. And then when you got so many kids who are angry at the system and don't know what to do, you know, it upsets me to see these guys with their pants hanging around their asses and stuff, you know, like that, you know. But in the grand scheme of things, you know, it's like having a puppy that's scared. When you look at what's going on and you see the Republican Party, those guys are actually horrified. As long as the money keeps coming in, you know, they know they still will in the power. But I think it really horrified them when they seen that black man get elected to office twice. They knew that the end days were coming. So we might as well make as much money. That's why I look at it with Trump up in there.
And with the changing demographics of the United States, Robert, why do you think that the Republican Party is so intent on destroying Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare? They want to make sure that they get the money out of it, use it for themselves, you know, before the country gets all brown and stuff, and they get it. I mean, this is the 21st century equivalent of burying the family silver before the barbarian hordes can run across your little Roman villa.
Well, you know, it was like even when Ronald Reagan, well, when he fucked up California when he was the governor, you know, I couldn't understand even him being president, you know, the so-called welfare queen, you know, scam, you know, which you have to admire them for the ignorance. They played on the ignorance. Yes, babe. They played on the ignorance. Yes, they played on the ignorance that of whites. You know, they played on it to the point to where it's like, well, all we have to do is tell these rednecks in the South that the blacks are sticking their doing this, the Mexicans are doing this. All the brown skinned people, hell, look at the damn Indians. This was their home, and they're getting screwed left and right. But as long as we can tell them this, they're going to believe what we say. That's like those idiots on that panel. No matter that Trump's fucking us, I'm going to vote for him again. Why?
Yeehaw! I know.
It makes no damn sense. It makes, you know, to be honest, you know, and well, 7 years.
Yeah.
And I'm in an interracial, you know, in a racial marriage. But the thing is, I know she's straight Yankee. She's from the South, Iowa. I mean, damn, you can't get more.
No, wait, what?
she's from Sioux City, you know.
Yeah, South Iowa, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and but I mean, she's never actually heard of Malcolm X coming up. I'm like, really? I mean, you know, I didn't blow it out of, you know, I just like, you know, the thing I did, I went and bought her the Spike Lee movie. Here. You know, this will pretty much explain who Malcolm X was, you know.
Well, and there, you know, there's so much to be learned. A great starting place is always Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States. And
exactly.
And doors open after that. I tell you what, Robert, this has been a wonderful call. I hope it will not be your last. And very you know happy what, and a very happy 51st birthday to you.
Well, thank you, sir. And I will be joining, and I'm gonna figure out that PayPal. I'm a dinosaur when it comes to sending money, so I don't know what to do or how to do it.
Well, it's not terrible complicated, but just whenever you get it figured out, it'll be much appreciated. But in the meantime, like I was saying with Larry, tell the friends and neighbors and. We'll grow this conversation, and we'll make it bigger and bigger.
Well, I appreciate you, and keep up the good work.
All right, thank you, Robert. Thank you very kindly.
All right, goodbye.
Bye now. Brand new caller, Robert from Texas. Tickles me pink, and I really do mean pink when we get new callers. I just love that. Let's see. Good news. Good news indeed. Thank you, John. Thank you very kindly. We are now down to only $5 to go to knock down Matt in San Francisco's Chinless Mitch Challenge. $5 to go. Thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you very much indeed. Note coming in from Vicente. Hi, Bob. Great show, and always love it when you fill in for Malloy. That'll be coming around for the fourth and final time here in about an hour and 18 minutes. But now that I know you have a show yourself, I'll keep in mind to listen as well. Well, today, the GOP, goddamn obstinate pea brains. I do like that. Wait a minute. Yeah, that's cowbell worthy. Although I think we could probably have floor debate and no cloture on whether or not that P stands for pea brains or piss ants. But, it's a matter of taste. Well, today, the goddamn obstinate pea brains once again showed their disdain for the democratic process. Mitch the Turtle triggered his nuclear option in nominating Justice Gorsuch, SMH. Popeye, McCain, said his usual hollow statements while voting for it. Arizona truly needs to get him and Lindsey Graham to play Battleship. Wait a minute. This is a two cowbell letter. That's an image that's going to be stuck in my mind for a little while. Bomber John and Lindsay down there to the old family estate in South Carolina, burning chode, sitting there side by side. Well, not side by side. You can't play Battleship that way. But maybe end to end, Lindsay on the fainting couch, and maybe John in a fine old Chesterfield. And H3. You sunk my battleship, John. These monkey turd-flinging Republicans, Vicente says, get to use a measure to nominate who they want without an actual period of advice and consent. I didn't see it here. They picked an official to the highest court who sides for goods and profits over the people who make it possible to obtain them. What will be next is up to us as women, as brown people. How low can it go? Our citizens now are living a nightmare. So at this point, it would just have to take an actual incident on one of these Republicans to take a collective relief all over the Constitution. They do that all too willingly and easily, I fear. These people do not and will not govern. There was not even much advice and consent on the matter. It seems they were happy to toss any right-wing lame brain in a black gown that they knew they could twist like a pretzel. They're doing everything to throw acid all over the name Barack Obama. The lawmakers do not care about a nation of laws that have degenerated into a nation of laws without actual common sense. Hear, hear, Vicente. Hear, hear. And in point of fact, the central truth of what he writes is that the Republicans aren't interested in governing. Their only purpose in trying to get into government is to destroy it. That's it. Because they are opponents of the actual idea of governance. And particularly, government by popular sovereignty, if you will. Not to use that term in the... sovereign citizens collecting guns and... No. But the idea that the people can govern themselves as opposed to needing a monarch or a plutocrat or an oligarch. You know, it's worth remembering, as we talk about democratic institutions and democratic processes, one, that if you go to the Federalist Papers, you'll find a discussion there in which James Madison says, look, what we're doing, the government we're setting up is not particularly democratic, but here's the trick. We'll just say that it is. And so whatever it is that we come up with, we'll call it democracy. I mean, it's really there. You can go find it. Don't take my word for it. And then the second thing that Vicente says that I think is very, very valuable. They are doing everything to throw acid all over the name of Barack Obama. There is a Latin term for that. It's called damnatio memoriae. Damnatio is the root word from which we get damnation, or to damn, D-A-M-N. And it is the cursing of memory. And several cultures did it. Once upon a time in the land of Chem, which is what they called it, and the Greeks decided to call it Egypt instead, Egyptus. They had a pharaoh who pissed off all the priests because he wanted to change the way that the country worshipped, and he wanted everybody to worship a sort of monotheistic idea of the sun god, if I understand correctly, and the name of the sun god was Aten, and his name was Akhenaten. And for as long as he remained on the Egyptian throne, he pissed off everybody. So that when he was dead, when he finally died, they literally scrubbed his name from all of the steles and steles, all the steles and all the public proclamation carvings. They rubbed his name out. And the funny thing is, because, you know, history doesn't repeat so much as it rhymes, if you go online and you look for Akhenaten, A-K-H-E-N-A-T-E-N, you're going to see a guy who looks surprisingly like Barack Obama. I kid you not. And so there's a certain irony in the fact that, Vicente says they're throwing acid all over everything he touched. Well, what they are engaging in is an old practice referred to in Latin as damnatio memoriae. And it came down through history. At one point in time, when there was a big fight over who was going to get to be pope, they pulled one dead pope out of the ground, put him on trial dead, and then threw him in the Tiber River after they convicted him, because he wasn't much good at testifying in his own defense, being, dead and all. Thank you, Kitty, in Boston. Thank you very kindly for jumping in and finishing off Matt in San Francisco's challenge. Ralph's with a note, keeping the ball rolling here in the final moments of the program. Ralph says, I'm offering a $25 nuclear option challenge. Hugs, and you're doing a great job subbing for Mike. Well, thank you, Ralph. Thank you very kindly. I do appreciate it. And so there's $25 looking to be matched, and if there's another $25 rolling around out there, it will be turned into $50, courtesy of Ralph's. Thank you, Ralph. Thank you very much indeed. So, here we are at 9 minutes before the hour, and what's left? A good bit is the case, as it turns out, but it's always difficult, at least for me, who cannot say his freaking name in 9 minutes or less, to jump onto a new topic. So maybe we'll just loop back around to the beginning. I am a devoted disciple of the Goddess of Irony. And this evening, Comrade Kumquat is busily further fucking up our relationship with China. I heard it discussed earlier today, saying, "Well, this isn't really a high level policy. The discussion, this is more of a getting to know you kind of thing." And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this will be the second King and I reference in 2 days. I hear not Deborah Carr's voice singing "Getting to Know You," and Jesus. And that's the thing about this presidency. When this orange fucker brushes his teeth, it's fraught with possibilities for disaster. And now, on Safe Democracy Day, we're told that it may be time for us to make some more war. But we're going to make war in order to make peace. No matter how many people we have to kill to do it. Somewhere out there, there's got to be somebody who understands that logic just doesn't hold up. We're going to murder and kill and maim and torment our way to happiness for people who live in Syria, while the Russians also murder and maim and kill and torment their way toward happiness. And somehow or another, I just expect that we're not going to wind up with the happiness we think we're going to get. Or that they're going to get. Because, Syria Shmiria, it really doesn't have anything to do with us. And apart from the fact that the Russians would really like to control some warm water, warm weather, Mediterranean coastline, it doesn't have much to do with them. And so democracy is going to go out and make everything all better. Pardon my cynicism. Meanwhile, Steve in New York says, I can hear Trump to the Chinese president now. I really love your General So. He's got the best chicken. Really the best chicken. I wish that didn't seem... That's almost a dim leader joke. But it seems absolutely eminently possible with Trump, too. Because he's not a smart man. Anybody who has to walk around telling you how smart he is probably isn't. Brooklyn Magazine has a story in which former Saturday Night Live cast member Taron Killam, who does a lot of impressions, talked to the folks at the magazine. And he said that when Tangerine Tiberius appeared on the December 2015 episode of SNL, he said Trump, and the word he used was struggled to even read the jokes that the writers put together for him. He struggled to read at the table read, which did not give many of us great confidence. He is, I think, I suspect, I fear, barely literate. And the last time we had a barely literate president, it was Andrew Johnson. How'd that work out? Yeah. So it's about 2 minutes before the hour. Like I said, we'll knock off for an hour. Thank you, everyone, for answering Matt in San Francisco's Chinless Mitch Challenge. That's awesome news. Thank you, Ralphs, for putting the $25 nuclear option challenge on the table. Hopefully that will be responded to. And I'm going to knock off now and get turn everything around and see. We have to completely rotate the studio in order to turn it into Malloy. Oh, thank you, Alma. Alma answered Ralph's challenge. Yay! The nuclear option challenge has been met. Thank you, Alma. Thank you very kindly. So I will bid you all a good night and thank you for your participation and the kindness of you spending your precious finite time with this broadcast each and every evening, however you do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you, News Ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Catch y'all in about an hour.